All right. Good morning. It's good to see all of you. I want to do an exercise with you, and we're going to do what's called a listening exercise and see what, if we really concentrated, all the things we could really hear. So I'm going to ask you to get comfortable. There you go. And that means not just kind of lying around, but sitting up. And because that's actually, you're not being sleepy, you're being the very opposite. You're being very awake. And what we're going to do is comfortable, and we're going to be quiet, and we're going to be comfortable enough so we don't have to move too much. And I'm going to invite you to close your eyes, everyone. Now, we're going to be, so with our eyes closed and not talking or doing too much noise making of our own, I want you to listen and see what you hear. So we're just going to take just about 30 seconds and see what we can hear. Okay, now, one at a time, raise your hand and tell me anything you heard. Hi, what'd you hear? All right, you heard somebody talking. Yeah, yes, sir. A beeping sound. What else? Anybody else hear anything? Music? Well, the quiet is music to your ears, yes. Anybody else hear anything? You didn't hear anything? I heard a zipper. Oh, Julia. Say again. You heard silence. It was very quiet, actually, wasn't there? I thought I'd hear some cars, but I didn't hear. I listened hard. But I heard the machine. Yep. Yep. The ding-ding sound. Yeah, you know what? I would have never heard those things had I not taken 30 seconds and listened. And there's a whole world out there that if we sometimes are quiet enough, we can hear. And I find it really kind of exciting to be able to listen to the various things that are going on around me and just naming them. Let's say a prayer. Loving God, thank you for all of the things that make noise in the world. Help us to be grateful for them and for our ability to be able to hear and see and experience. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, I'm going to invite you to quietly go with Miss Denise.
Then Jesus returned in the power of the Spirit to Galilee. News about him spread throughout all the surrounding area, and he used the time to teach in their meeting places and was acclaimed by everyone. When he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, he went to the meeting place on the Sabbath, as was his custom. He stood up to do the reading and was handed the scroll of the prophet Isaiah. He unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to announce pardon of prisoners and recovery of sight to the blind, to set free the oppressed, to proclaim this year the year of the Lord's amnesty. After rolling up the scroll, he gave it back to the attendant and sat down. And the attention of everyone in the meeting place was riveted on him. He began by saying to them, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled as you listen." And they all were responding favorably to him and marveling at the pleasing speech that he delivered. And then they were saying, "Isn't that the son of Joseph?" And he said to them, "No doubt you will quote me the proverb, 'Doctor, cure yourself,' and tell me, Do here in your hometown what you have heard about, what we have heard about you have done in Capernaum. Then he said, I hear this a lot at home. Let me tell you, no prophet is welcome in his home turf. I can assure you, there are many widows in Israel in Elijah's time, when the sky was dammed up for 3.5 years and a severe famine swept through the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but instead to a widow in Zephah near Sidon. There are also many lepers in Israel in the prophet Elijah's time, but none of them was made clean except the Naaman the Syrian. Everyone in the meeting place was filled with rage when they heard this. They rose up, ran him out of town, and led him to the brow of the hill on which their town was built, intending to hurl him over the cliff. But he slipped away through their fingers and got away. This reading, The Summer Day, is by Mary Oliver. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
I'm ready.
Ready? All right.
Not ready.
Ready for what? What are we doing?
What are we doing? You know what we're doing. Can you hear me? Am I on? Yeah? No.
It's on, is it? The light's on?
It's on.
You're on.
I'm on.
It's got to be a rock star.
Yeah, I'm going to be a rock star. Okay. What are we doing? You know, I've been around the church for a long time. And we used to have a saying, if I fall off of this, will you rescue me?
Okay. I'll pray for you.
All right. I'd like a little hands-on, please. we used to have a saying around here, and I don't think we said it for a very long time, but it's still true today, and it is went something like this. Yet again, it is another unusual morning at South, Sunday morning at Southminster. Do you remember that? Yeah? We used to say that. It's different, because it's different all the time. So Larry came back this morning, or is here, and he said, the reason I like to come here is that it's kind of different every time. And so I guess we are continuing in the tradition. Because this is different, isn't it?
It is a little bit different.
It is a little bit different. Okay. I really do have a few notes. Okay. This comes to you because years ago, I interviewed a man by the name of Colin Jones, who came to Southminster from South Africa. And he needed to get out of South Africa because he was a little kind of a hot commodity. He was an assistant to Desmond Tutu, and he was a member of the, or he was a pastor in the Episcopalian Church. And things got a little bit hot for him during the apartheid movement, and so it was thought that he ought to get out of town for a little bit. And he was supposed to come and teach at the Episcopal School, all right? Well, something happened, and he didn't get to the Episcopal School over here, but our pastor went on sabbatical, and so Colin Jones came here for the length of the sabbatical, 5 months, okay? And in order to introduce him, and his family, his wife was with him, and their two children, in order to introduce them, I said, why don't I interview Colin? And so people said, yeah, good idea. And so I interviewed Colin, and it was a great way for him to become known to the congregation, right? And then after that, when Peg came, somebody said, why don't you interview Peg? And so I said, sure, it's fun, I'd like to do that. And so I interviewed Peg. And then you came.
And they say, we don't want to know about that.
No. Well, evidently, almost everyone in the congregation had grown old along with me, and the interview process was not even thought of. It didn't even enter the horizon. So we could have done this 3 or 4 years ago, but here we are today. And so I am looking at this as sort of a catch-up interview kind of thing, and so that we can see a little bit about you and have a little bit of fun. And there are no gotchas here. Okay, so let's start at the beginning. You grew up in Montana. What was it like growing up in Montana?
It was a childhood dream. I had a pony. My father taught school at Montana Tech, and then he had a little farm. And so I grew up on a farm and in Whitehall, Montana. It was actually a very nice growing up. Went to the Baptist church, and my mother went to church, and my father went to church with my mother, even though he didn't really believe in it, but they let him play his clarinet. And it kept my mother from driving to Butte to that other church, and he didn't like her driving around. He liked to keep tabs, so he went to church with her.
I see. Did he pay attention?
When he could. It was a tough church.
When
I mean, it was, you know, they didn't believe in evolution and stuff like that,
yeah.
You know.
Okay.
So it was kind of a challenge for him intellectually.
Yes. Okay. I see. What do you remember? What's one of your best memories of going to church?
I was pretty good at it. I knew, you know, all the Bible in order and the Bible books and to do the sword drills and find the verses and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I was it was fun until it wasn't fun, until it got to be about junior high age and you know, which is like not fun for a lot of kids. But the church especially was like, I just don't believe a lot of this stuff anymore.
Okay. Even then, junior high?
Yeah, junior high, probably we're moving into high school maybe.
Okay. When you were in high school, did you belong to clubs? Did you play sports? Did you do things like that?
Yeah, I went all the way through junior high, I did all the sports. And then I switched high schools. I went to a Catholic high school in Butte. And then
why didn't you do any sports there?
Angst. I didn't feel I probably had the opportunity. Didn't feel I had any friends. Probably was going to end up, you know, just smoking dope with all the stoners. So maybe going to the Catholic high school would be a good solution.
I see. Was it? You mean there's no smoking dope at Catholic schools?
Well,
Kate. No. Oh, I see. Okay. Yes. All right. So you graduated from a Catholic?
Graduated from Butte Central Catholic High School.
Okay. Did you like your high school experience?
I did. It was weird because I was the weird kid going to this Catholic school from Whitehall in a different town. So it was,
okay.
It was all that. But yeah, I liked it a lot. And I still have connections with
your high school buddies,
yep.
Did you? Okay, did you have a favorite teacher there?
Yeah, Brother Ferrero. Is that what's his name? Ferrar. Anyway, he taught physics. And another guy who taught biology, I like, who just passed away, actually.
Okay.
Doc, we called him.
Okay. Did you work?
Worked on the farm.
On the farm. Yes, okay. All right. When did you realize that you had a push or a pull towards ministry? Was it around this time, or before that, or after that?
It was late. I was done with God. So, and in high school and all of that stuff, I got, the quick story is, went to college at Montana State. I was going to be a chemical engineer like I was supposed to be. Realized I didn't want to do it. So, dropped out of college after a couple of years and went to radio school in Billings, Montana, where I met another college dropout. Same college. I didn't know her, though. We both had seen each other at Montana State. We were both seeing each other in plays. And we remembered seeing each other, but we hadn't known each other. But we met in radio school. And so that's where we met, and we started dating. And then 4 months later, we got married. The minister didn't think we should
you
get
know,
married.
It was much too soon. It'll
I know,
never
that's
last.
What he said. And but he did it anyway.
Yeah, of course.
And he was probably right, but also wrong. So anyway, that's what led us to, you're back to the original question.
Okay.
Eventually, we did radio together. Both of us were disc jockeys in Mountain Home, Idaho, and then Boise, Idaho. Thought we were hot stuff, moved to Seattle. Got positions there in radio announcing, and then it was there that Bev went to church.
Oh.
She grew up a Presbyterian.
Oh.
And so that's why. And so she started going to church. Again, South Africa, the minister was from South Africa.
Uh-huh.
And she invited me to go one day. Well, actually, it was a drive in the car. And she said, and I asked her, well, what did the minister talk about in church? And she said, he said, it's time to stop living for yourself and start living for God. Now, I don't know to this day whether she was really saying what the minister said.
Secrets.
But it inspired me. So I went and visited and was inspired by this guy who was from South Africa. He also had to leave South Africa because he was critical of the government. He talked favorably about evolution. And so suddenly Presbyterianism was a place where I could find, and I felt, hey, I can do something here. So I started to attend. And here's the deal. I started to attend, and my wife just wanted me to go to church, not run the place.
Oh.
But it wasn't long before I felt a call.
Did you? Okay.
To go into the ministry.
Okay.
So it was there.
Yeah. Was it a push or was it a pull?
Was it a push or a pull? I'm not sure what the difference is, but...
Let me show you.
It was a force. Force to be reckoned with. No, it was more of just a thing. Hey, this is something that's happening. And so I went, and so you have to test whether you can't just go think you got a call and go off and do crazy things. You have to actually have other people affirm it or not. So I went and saw Francis, the minister, and asked him what it takes to be a minister. I thought, you know, go to Bible school, boom. And then he told me all the stuff he had to do and all the languages and all of this stuff. And he pulled out all these books. You got to read this and learn that. So I think he was trying to discourage me, but actually I thought that was pretty interesting. So
So here you are.
So I started there. So he was my mentor, as I said, I had to go finish my undergraduate degree then at University of Washington.
Okay.
In English, and then went to seminary. Mm-hmm. So he was helpful all along the way.
All right, good. Okay, you've had several churches. Last one was in Tennessee. And what was before that?
Okay, so the first one from Princeton Seminary, I went up to upstate New York, Lowellville, New York, rhymes with Cowville. 300, cows outnumber people 3-1. So very rural area, New England type of village, 200 inches of snow a year. It's a church right at the head of town, the main street. You look out the pulpit, and you go all the way down Main Street, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
A beautiful old stone building that was built in the 1830s and still there, you know. So that was my first experience. Lovely thing. That's where we raised our kids for the most part, a beautiful little village.
Nice. And then Tennessee?
Then Billings, Montana. So it'd been in New York for about 8.5 years, and it felt like it was probably a time to go. And so, well, here's how it started. My parents had their 50th wedding anniversary, and I went out and I talked to my dad, and he said, well, when are you going to come move out west?
Oh.
And I says, I'll never. We'll probably be out here, you know, this is where it happens. Well, that summer, after I had that conversation, we drove around and saw that there was a position open at Billings.
Oh.
And I hadn't even, you know, and so I thought, well, for a lark, I'll fill out the paperwork. Well, as it turned out, I got that position, which ironically is the church that we were married in, and be following the minister who married us but didn't want to.
He didn't want to marry you?
No. He didn't think. I think he got over it by the time then, but, you know, no, when we were, because he thought we were too young, just like you did. Hadn't known each other enough. And I didn't believe in God, I told him.
Oh, okay. Well, that'd do it for a pastor, yeah. I suppose. Right. Okay.
I've since grown a lot, by the way, on that question.
Would you want me to ask you the question?
You can get there whenever you're ready.
Okay. Let's see. Well, here you are now. Here we are. And it is clear since the beginning, since you came here, that you don't fit the mold of the usual stereotypical pastor. And as my father would say, if he were here, and he used to be, sitting somewhere right out there, he would say, you are definitely a different breed of cat. Meow.
That's a compliment.
Yes, I think so. And I can't remember, I can't but wonder how you were received at your prior churches. Did you get in trouble?
Well, yeah, one story that's real quick. I used to go, my first church, let me do it really quickly. My seminary, 1989, it's orientation day, right? The first day of school. And we're all sitting there waiting for, you know, the different groups. And so all the people from the seminary would get up and talk about whatever club they were in and what you could join and all that kind of stuff. Well, this young man got up and he said, I'm a member of Presbyterians for Gay Concerns, and we meet on such a day. Well, you could see the room just go... And the guy next to me, you know, and he whispered under his breath, well, there shouldn't be a group like that on campus. Now, I had no idea of anything. I didn't even really know what gay was. But I thought, well, what's wrong with him having a group if he wants a group? And so it was nothing any more complicated than that. But it started me really thinking, wait a second, what is all this about? And so throughout my seminary and with that ended up being an issue of justice for me. It's just, I just don't like people getting picked on. Okay. And that's really where it all starts. And so I was active in that. And by that time, we're talking late 80s, early 90s, the church was not cool on this. And so when you asked me if I got in trouble, well, I go to my first church. It was a pretty conservative area. Upstate New York is very conservative. Republicans also outnumber Democrats 3-1. And so I'd go and I'd preach my yearly sex sermon and then go on vacation. Except it really wasn't a sex sermon. For me, it was a justice sermon. It was a justice issue for sexual minorities, because that usually happened in the summer, right at the time the General Assembly was coming out. And so it was pretty tentative that I'd have those kinds of questions. But by the time I left that congregation, I did a survey on them and asked them what they thought about issues regarding sexuality. And I was really surprised to get them back. About 80% of the people were where I was, pretty much. And only a small group really wasn't. And I think that news really hadn't gotten out.
Yes.
You know, because I think people think
yes.
The worst of everyone.
Yes.
And so it was really a positive thing.
Hmm. Okay. What in a... About your theology, what is your definition of progressive Christianity in a nutshell, if possible?
This again goes to seminary, because we got an unwritten, unspoken, directly message that all the stuff that's really interesting about theology, biblical criticism and all of this kind of stuff, don't share that with your congregation. Because it might hurt their faith. And that was kind of the message you got. And I didn't like that message. I thought it was a bad message. I felt that we should share the things that we're learning in seminary and deal with whatever the outcomes are on that. And so for me, very early on, I did share things. And in fact, it was a parishioner who showed me Dominic Crossan's book, Revolutionary Biography, way back in 1994, by the way, advertisement, he's coming here in April, and that was really an eye-opener for me. And when the Time magazine came out with the Jesus Seminar findings, Time and World News and whatever the other one is, Newsweek, all with the Jesus Seminar stuff, and all my colleagues were kind of, oh, we don't want to tell people that, or we just tell them that that's old news, you know. And I said, no, this is good stuff, and it should be shared. And I shared it in a sermon and talked about it and said, I think you guys are better than having to be, you know, paternalized in terms of, you know, that we know what you should know. And so
that
was a deal. That's what progressive means for me. It's being able to be open and honest with what's really you think is going on.
Okay. How was that sermon received?
Some people left.
Mm-hmm.
I lost people in all of my churches.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who didn't like what I said, who didn't like that approach.
Okay.
But there are more people who stayed and people who came.
Okay. Where would you like to see Southminster in 5 years?
One thing I really wanted to do when I came here, and I didn't insist on it, and we're doing it a little bit now, is to be able to be a hub where the most interesting speakers can come and be here and present their ideas, like Dominic Crossan, who is probably one of the key people of the Jesus Seminar. The thing is that the poor committee has to scrounge up, make sure they get 100 people paying $50 for this to happen. We need an endowment. We need a gift. We need something that supplies this every year so people can come without having to pay that kind of money. The Jesus Seminar is great when we have them, but again, you got to pay a lot of money. It makes it unreachable for so many people. And I would love to be able to be that place where ideas come. And I think we have some neat options. We're in a great location, got great parking, a great facility. We could really be a place that is where that can happen.
Yes, I think so. I think so. Are you keeping time?
What if we go for about 3.5 minutes?
If you were a little more specific about that, I might make it happen. All right? Let's see. Your new actions here to connect with the congregation. You're hanging out at Sherry's. That's what I'm talking about. You're hanging out at Sherry's a couple mornings.
Pie. Want pie? I'll buy you pie.
Yeah, that's right. You were giving us an excuse to have pie for breakfast. Okay. Have you had some folks come
up? Announcement came out right away the next day. So here's the announcement now.
Oh.
So Wednesday, yeah, come on out. I think it'd be, I don't know if people would find that fun. I just, you know, come and we just have some conversations. I'll bring up some list of questions and people can have them. I'm trying to just think of various ways. I think it's important, to do what we did. Maybe this could have been done 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's to be undone now.
Yeah.
So, and here's an opportunity I have this time to be able to see if we can get to know you.
The Breakfast Club.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. I think that's taken, though, isn't it? Okay. You seem to be having some fun around here. You seem to enjoy the bell choir. You like that?
I do.
Did you see the smile?
I do. I find ministry fun.
Yeah.
And you know, I will give a thing in this whole radio show thing to explain what that was. I want you to know what that was. This congregation, thank you, helped pay for most of it. 7 years it happened. And I did 7 interviews, probably over 350 interviews. It's actually, it's a project that I've completed. And so 300 Reader's Digest books you can think of. And you can use them, play them. People have used them. We've used it in adult Sunday school, whatever. It was an opportunity to bring voices out. And it was unusual in that a minister does it on secular radio. So the announcement is to the secular community of these kinds of things. And Southminster, by giving me the time and some resources, You made that gift available to the community that continues to last. And I really appreciate it. It's a way that I was able to study, to keep up with what was going on, as well as to share voices, sometimes voices that sometimes are famous people, but sometimes they're just people who needed, had something to say, and that was able to happen. So mm-hmm. I'm appreciative of that.
Okay. What would your ideal world look like?
The end of wars. I think we need to end this $1 trillion a year budget that is destroying lives all over, including our own. And we need to find a better way. We are not living sustainably at all. And part of that is this militarized world that we live in. And I think it's important for the church to name those things, even as they might be uncomfortable.
Do you think any progress is being made towards that? Can't think of any.
Huh? No, I can think. Oh. Yeah, I do. I the progress, I think, is when people speak out. And I think it's been, yeah, I think there has been progress, but it takes people with courage to be able to speak up against all of the forces against it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one last question. See that?
Is this the hard one? What is it?
It's a hard one.
Yeah.
Okay, go.
Pippa, question mark. Pippa is the name of my granddaughter, will probably be our only granddaughter, and that means she'll get lots of stuff. And it's a riding question. This is the question that matters no matter what I do, whether I'm here, whether I'm somewhere else. What is this world going to be like when Pippa is my age, and what am I doing about it? There's nothing else that matters. And that is, so that means whatever risks need to be taken, I have to take them. Whatever truths need to be told, whatever questions I need to do, whatever I got to do to make that happen. And I also believe that it isn't just going to be an apocalyptic desolation. That could be, but it certainly will be if I don't do anything. And to the level that we can participate in being awake to what is happening in our world and participate towards peace and justice. Mm-hmm. That's why she's there. But she's also, obviously, she's my granddaughter, and she's so much fun, and she's the cutest baby on earth. Other than that.
Okay. It sounds to me like you're a man with missions.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yes.
And I'm excited to, you can't do that alone. You have to have a community. So I'm hoping that Southminster will work with me. We've had 4 years and maybe another few years to work with us on these things and bring your ideas. And I think that's really important for us as a group to communicate with one another and with me publicly together and say, hey, here's what I can envision: a big newsprint from 1958 to the present, and what are all the interesting things that happened at Southminster? To have the congregation put that timeline together in a group, and then be able to talk about what it is, who we are, and where it is we want to go next, and what are the challenges we're facing.
Well, that's doable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not volunteering. I'm just commenting. Yes. Yes.
I think you've done your role right here.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
It's been fun.
It has been.